The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY with no spaces. And you'll save an additional 20% on these already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com, and remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY at checkout to save big. Now, let's get on with the show. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, also known as Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly, horribly named podcast series. But the Q&A, of course, stands for question and answer, as I like to make this an interactive conversation, an interactive discussion on the top tech news stories facing our industry. And it's also why I like to host my show on a Monday. We can get our week started right, be on the lookout for the tech stories that are going to matter to us. And it gives us a little time to sort out our feelings, kind of look back at the last week. Maybe some breaking news happened over the weekend. Maybe there was some breaking news that happened 40 minutes ago on the Google Play Store, which was a kind of silly, embarrassing thing for Google to have for the Pixel 4a. Who knows? We're going to be talking about a lot of stuff today, and I'm already seeing a killer, an absolutely fantastic collection of friendly faces here in the live stream. I'm seeing Blind Prosopagnosiac. I've mispronounced your name. Tech Odyssey, Nick Fell, Root Knight 5, Vazicos, Gabaletta, Natacoon, Heike, Keynes, ER 1980, Chatty Boy, Andy, Aditya, Gabaletta, Trent Marshall. What's up? So I'm already feeling pretty well represented. We're going to have a killer conversation this week. Lots of news that we've got to chew through. I'm going to try and keep... I liked the flow of last week's show. That rhymed better than I thought it would in my head. I just kind of chewing through our housekeeping. We've got a lot of housekeeping that we do need to talk about, and I'm going to spend a little longer on housekeeping this week. Some tech and politics stories that we just need to keep our eyes on. You know, what's going on with the future of net neutrality and some antitrust investigations happening throughout the tech community. And then I really liked having a bit more time, a bit more elbow room to chat out what's going on in the gadget block, especially with Canon dropping these new cameras. And I just thought it would be some interesting conversations outside of our normal phone-heavy discussion, talking about optics and what that means for content creators and what it means for general consumers. So, really, really good times, a great list of topics to talk about, and a number of friends for me to spend some time with. I'm already looking forward to this Monday. I am going to warn you ahead of time, I have been doing way too much talking, and my voice is getting fuzzy already. So I'm going to try and keep... I'm gonna try and keep this show running. I apologize if you're gonna hear a lot of sipping of water and throat clearing. I'm not sure I can make it through the show without that. So let's jump into some housekeeping. Before we jump into some housekeeping, I hope you've had a fantastic weekend. I hope you were able to get some time to unplug, to rest, to recuperate. Should be really nice. I'm already seeing Chatty Boy 3, housekeeping 3 hours today. I have to beat 3 hours. I think we can do it. Aditya Anil saying 8 minutes. ER1980 saying 5. Nick Fell saying 17. Now, this was... I've got a lot of content. I'm churning through a lot of content. But this was also kind of an important week for a strategy that I've been completely failing to implement. And I think you're gonna see what I mean here. You're probably watching this on some kind, if you're watching the streaming video of this podcast and you're not listening to the audio after I've recorded it, you're not watching this on YouTube. I have had some philosophical disagreements on how YouTube conducts business, and especially for where I'm trying to foster community and have some grown-up conversations. You know, why I'm being so cagey about the situation is because of YouTube, of some very draconian measures from YouTube, which can impact how we have conversations. I'm responsible for the quality of the comments on my videos, so it's a part-time job chewing through all of the garbage comments on my YouTube videos just because of the danger of the potential of getting something like a community strike if I'm not keeping up with cleaning that kind of garbage out. Again, the rules for a YouTuber my size, very different than someone who's operating a channel with millions of subscribers. And so I tried to remove some of that pressure, and that's why we're streaming this on Twitch and why Mixer is gonna die a dumpster fire death. So when we look at where we're hosting conversations, how we're producing reviews, and how algorithms, you know, Facebook style, YouTube style, popularity algorithms completely changed the landscape for tech content. It's become a mission of mine to diversify, to find other opportunities to have some of these conversations. So jumping into housekeeping, that was a really long preamble. Let me get this out of the way here. Three-Legged Couch says hello. So everyone say hi, all. So these are the top stories, all of the stories, all of the news links, everything that we're going to be talking about this week will be found on the show notes, somegadgetguy.com. On this last week, this was kind of a big deal. OnePlus 8 Pro camera conclusion, OnePlus's most important camera. So I have had some issues. It's been a struggle getting my camera deep dive videos produced to a quality that I feel matches the kinds of conversations I was producing last year. And a big part of that is, you know, sheltering in place, trying not to walk around city streets at night, you know, not having access to familiar landmarks. It's easy to find a flow. I've been shooting the same landmarks pretty much since late 2012, early 2013. You know, the creepy tunnel, creepy gate, Ventura Boulevard at night. You know, those places, I know where to go. I know what I'm looking for. And it really abbreviates the camera acclimation, like how I get to know the feel of a camera, how I shoot with it. It's very simple. I go to that grassy field out by Lake Balboa and I shoot the same tree. I've been shooting the same tree for just over 8 years. I know what I'm looking for. I know how I want the autofocus to respond. I know how I want the zoom sensor to capture that image. You know, like it is muscle memory. And so when I'm deprived of that, when I no longer have those shortcuts, it takes me so much longer to shoot one of these. So the OnePlus 8 Pro has been out for a little while, but I'm also really glad that this that I took my time on this, because one of the other things that we have to know about OnePlus phones is that the software experience, the camera experience, significantly different after a couple updates. And so forcing myself into this 2-month window before I finally put out a OnePlus 8 Pro, review, something I feel comfortable calling a review, not a hands-on feature, first look, first impressions, reaction review. This camera is so critically being slighted by the rest of the smartphone tech community. This is one of the most important shooters of the year, and I'm glad that it took me a little longer to get a feel for it. I'm glad that I had to take my time a little bit longer to shoot with it, to sort of understand it. And I'm glad over that period of time, I was treated to some pretty significant improvements to camera performance thanks to the software updates. So the camera conclusion is public. The camera deep dive is, of course, a Patreon exclusive, but you can at least get a sense of how I feel about the camera based on the camera conclusion. So let me get this back over here into screen share. This is one of the reasons why I'm trying to spread out, I'm not leaving YouTube, but I'm trying to spread out and have other kinds of conversations away from YouTube. I feel like the amount of time and effort that goes into making a video, if that video is about a less popular topic, there is no way for me to recoup the time and the monetization and the costs associated with making a higher quality video production. And it's funny because I'm talking about YouTube and how a phone like the Pixel 4 XL just cannot survive a conversation focused on video with decent production value in this day and age. We've got a story this week talking about a Pixel 4a rumor or leak. Actually, it's another silly leak from Google. It was the right time to take a look back at the Pixel 4 XL. This is a phone that has actually evolved surprisingly well over time. And it's worth having a conversation about really living with this phone. And this is a phone that, for all of the jokes that we tell about me being the LG shill guy or the Sony shill guy or the OnePlus shill guy, I would say has probably been the phone that's kept my SIM card the longest. Again, I'll bounce back and forth between an LG G8, a V50, the V60. I'm now popping back and forth between a V60 and the LG Velvet. You know, like all these different, this cornucopia of different phones. But in between, I need kind of a baseline. I need a foundation phone. And the Pixel 4 has been my can't quite separate myself from going back to it phone. That reviewer experience is so lopsided. There is no average consumer that flips $1,000 phones every week. It doesn't exist. I don't care how popular the YouTuber is. I don't care what kind of audience their channel courts. I don't care how wonderful of a storyteller they are. If a reviewer is trying to sum up the average consumer landscape and is talking about a different phone every other week, I don't believe in the philosophical discussion of how reviewers function. I don't believe you can have that as an objective conversation. So coming back to the Pixel 4 XL, this has been a phone that I feel has been horrifically slighted by the tech review community. This is a phone that has some very specific and some very clear advantages to promote, which are a little different. We can't pay lip service to the idea that no one phone is for everyone and then trash phones that have something clearly different to deliver for consumers. This is why YouTube is just kind of a popularity downward spiral, is because it's increasingly difficult to have those kinds of conversations that lie just outside the trending topics list for our industry. So I wrote up a really long look back. This is how I've been using the phone. This is what I appreciate about what the phone has to offer. This is a sort of it's a little bit of an attack on some of the trends that I don't like in terms of phone reviewing. You know, like I have some straw man quotes in here because I love, you know, reducing other people's arguments the way that people try to simplify my arguments. You know, saying things like other brands can include all of these other hardware features and basically the same software and do it at similar prices. And my argument to people who say things like that is, basically the same software is not the same software. Again, there is something that we should be celebrating about a software services heavy version of this phone, just like I miss having Nexbit in this market. You know, the Robin was this really aggressive and boundary pushing attempt at trying to turn our phones into more cloud-based software service side focused devices. We don't have that anymore. They got bought out by Razer, and then Razer canned them after two generations of phones. So now we have Google. Like, the Pixel becomes that counterpoint to beastly hardware. Is do we have a company that is as good at software hardware synergy and software services? And if it's going to be an Apple versus Google fight, they're coming at this from very different perspectives. So that Pixel 4 XL long-term revisit, again, it would have been an after the buzz if I were still at Pocket Now, just makes me really sad. I was writing that script out for a video, and the entire time I was getting to the conclusion, thinking like, this is going to end up being another 15-minute video if I really shoot it the way I want to. YouTube is never going to pay that off. It's going to take me so long to put that video together and to put it out there. And then, you know, if it gets shared on our Android, it's just going to be a bunch of our Android nerds saying, like, you know, man, I don't disagree with some of his points, but man, his tone, I mean, he just needs to work on his tone. What's with his tone? And then it would have just been every opportunity for someone to try and decide how they think I'm wrong, even though I haven't said anything that they really disagree with. So I walked away. I'm actually a little embarrassed to say, like, I should have fought that fight, but I really just couldn't stomach putting in that much work and knowing that it was probably going to count against my YouTube metrics, that like it was going to be a video that would underperform. It wouldn't really hit for those ad buys. It's going to hurt the channel in the long run. So I really need to move more of this content back to written articles, editorials, a place where I can kind of control. And this was a huge spike for my blog readership. I mean, again, pales in comparison to the 117,000 subscribers that I have on YouTube. Huge jump in my numbers on the website. So again, like, I want to host community discussions here on Twitch, and I want to direct people to the audio version of this podcast, because there's really nothing. I mean, like, I love that you folks hang out with me every week, but you don't need to see my face to go through these conversations. And then I feel like written articles are probably the future of how I'm going to be producing some of these longer term conversations. Just video after video after video after video is completely unsustainable, and YouTube does not recognize that effort in any way that helps us continue that type of video churn rate. So there's two more bits of housekeeping here. I housekeeping is going to run a little long today, but then I'm going to try and pick up and work the rest of this here. Let me get this out of the way. And just in terms of having some fun and talking about community and some interesting ways to utilize these streaming video platforms that we're all working on, I was really honored to join the crew at Tech King Mike's Saturday Night Tech Fights as a judge. I got to judge what is a ridiculously silly Battle Royale debate style video for the season 2 premiere of Saturday Night Tech Fights. There were plenty of shenanigans. There were some really thoughtful and engaging debates. Again, it's a silly premise. Basically, it's battle royale debate. Someone gets into the ring, and then they just have to keep debating individual questions with 90 seconds of time to talk out their side of the debate, and then they get kicked out when they lose one round. I mean, it's last man standing, last woman standing, last tech fan standing, and single elimination. So you could win 9 rounds and then get bumped out at the end. It's super silly, but it's also crazy entertaining. And I felt like there was a fun trio of judges where I got to play the heavy, picking apart the more rational sides of arguments. Scott from Technically Speaking was definitely more the emotional, like who was the more persuasive. And then Adrian was the sort of tiebreaker, but she kind of caused more shenanigans than she solved as the tiebreaker. So LFA reviews, good, by the way, good morning, everyone else who's joined in LFA and Two Spirits and Aditya Anil. She hit the shenanigans pretty hard, but it was fun. Again, I'm always excited to see different flavors of community, sort of community engagement, building a little base of people that want something fresh, and this is super fresh. Rounding out housekeeping, let me get this back here. From Hakey, you were basically the Simon Cowell of that debate. I think I was a little less blunt than Simon Cowell. I actually really like those classic years of American Idol with Simon Cowell. I know Simon Cowell is held up as he's the mean judge. He's not. He's blunt and he's a little bit rude, but he wasn't the mean judge. So Randy and what's her face? Paula? I can't remember her. Paula Abdul. Woof. A 90s kid brain fart. Something major there. So someone would be on stage, especially in those first early episodes, and they were singing horribly. Simon Cowell stone faced the entire time. It doesn't matter if you're good or you're bad. Simon Cowell stone faced the entire time. Someone's good. You see Randy and Paula and they're so, they're doing so well. And if someone's bad, they're mocking them while they're singing and Simon Cowell's stone face. And Simon Cowell will play the tough love card and say, you have no business being a singer. But he's not mocking them while they're doing it. He's not mugging for the camera while they're doing it. Simon Cowell was the nice judge on American Idol. But in Saturday Night Tech Fights, I was the one saying, in your debate style, you had me up until this line right here where you validated your opponent's argument. And so unfortunately, while I was agreeing with you, I have to give the win to your opponent because you told us why your opponent had a good idea. It's why I crave good debate, not just, who can win style points all the time. Anyway. Hashtag some Juan Cowell guy. Oh, man. Okay. Lastly, this is finally going to wrap us up on housekeeping as housekeeping is a longer segment today. This is one of the reasons why I also knew housekeeping was going to run a little long. We've been talking about tech reviewing and I've been writing these editorials, what are the responsibilities of a reviewer and what are the realities of trying to monetize your work as a reviewer. And I had a pair of really lovely conversations with Daniel Bader over at Android Central. And I mean, in full disclosure, I haven't always had the best interpersonal, the closest relationships with folks over at Mobile Nations. We all typically seem to get along. I wasn't really good friends with many of them. And sometimes you can have some, not standoffish. I mean, again, I'm not trying to make this dramatic, dirty laundry airing, but wasn't really quite sure what to make of Daniel before we had those conversations. And since then we've been Twitter DM pals. So when I forgot to pull up the article that Andrew wrote. This is the worst screen share housekeeping part I think I've ever done. Where did it go? Ah, dang it. Anyway, so an article was posted on Android Central talking about the Surface Duo and how Microsoft has not given us any good reasons to sort of explain the existence of the Surface Duo. And it just felt like yet another clear example of what I feel is problematic in the world of tech reviewing. The points made are salient points. They're cogent points. It still doesn't take away from sort of a very surface examination of the market, of consumer behavior, and an expectation that nothing new can succeed until that new idea is hammered out and then basically stolen by a more popular brand. And so I kind of bristled at the idea that a major part of the argument for this article was that Microsoft should have made a normal phone before trying to make a dual screen Surface. So let me screen this. I finally found the first article. Microsoft has given us no reason to believe the Surface Duo will be any good. It's really hard to make a great Android that competes in 2020, and Microsoft has a lot to learn. And again, it's a major part of this. You know, there's a steep learning curve for making Android run properly. The Surface Duo barely has the specs to be competitive. You're an early adopter. You'll put up with a lot, but that logic can only go so far. These are all the common sort of tech dog whistles that we see in our industry, sort of bemoaning anything which isn't immediately regurgitatively familiar. Again, the Surface on this is largely correct. Specs matter and user experience matters, and there are lots of things that go into making a phone, and making a phone is really complicated. But then you dig just that one layer deeper, and it's Apple hasn't made a dual screen phone, and Samsung's folding phones are still really, really new. So we're going to wait to praise this type of device until they make one of these phones. That's not what Andrew Martonic. Sorry, I'm spacing his name too. Today's going to be a little foggy too. I got a good night's sleep, but I'm just really, really slow on remembering things today. From ADTNL, a surface level examination of the Surface Duo. And good morning, Gary the Fireman. When I finished reading that article, and I immediately put fingers to keyboard, and it took me about an hour to sort of point by point write a rebuttal. And I was really, I mean, like, I had my finger on publish to have it out that same day. But again, I'd had some of these really thoughtful and lovely conversations with Daniel Bader. He's the managing editor over at Android Central. And I thought, why not? Let's give it a shot. Maybe they'd be interested in doing a counterpoint. And so I sent it over to him. And this is now my first byline as any form of contributor. I'm not an employee of Mobile Nations. I've not been hired by Mobile Nations. I am a guest contributor. But there is a name on this article, so there is a full rebuttal. Microsoft doesn't need to give Android fans good reasons for the Surface Duo's existence, as written by Juan Carlos Bagnell on AndroidCentral.com. And it's funny. My arguments are point by point, you know, again, sort of rebutting what the various trends I saw in Andrew's article. But when it's Mobile Nations, articles that kind of have overlap get sent to the various sub-brands at Mobile Nations. So there's Android Central, but there's also Windows Central. And just as a beautiful proof of how sort of tribal our tech commentary has become, the comments on Android Central are a little different than the reactions to this article on Windows Central. And especially from what I've been able to see from people sharing it on Twitter, it is funny. Like, I did get my precious, you know, oh, what's up with this guy's tone? He just thinks he knows better, and he needs to understand that people don't agree with him. But again, it's like, that wasn't the point of the article. The point of the article was competition is good. So if people don't agree with me, then it basically just confirms my deep set fears that the mobile market is just Samsung and Apple, because apparently you're against competition if you feel like I've somehow missed the boat on this editorial. So, it's really strange. First of all, it was satisfying seeing some of the Twitter debate happening. And like, again, it felt kind of nice with the Windows Central people kind of like, hey, yeah, this guy makes some good points. And when people say nice things about you on the internet, it feels pretty good. But this is the first major byline I've had since leaving Pocket Now that wasn't on one of my own properties or wasn't just like a podcast appearance on someone else's show. It feels really weird. I mean, like, to screen share this, my name being right there, I don't know. Like, when I left Pocket Now, I really had this feeling of like, you know, I'm going to go it alone. I'm going to do this on my own. It wasn't that I was soured to the idea of collaborating because of Pocket Now, but just like really, really wanted to have like some control over my own destiny. And I look at that and you're like, it's not bad. Like, I mean, it looks pretty cool. Maybe there is an opportunity for a bit more collaboration or picking up a writing gig or something like that. I don't know. It's worth looking at again. So yeah, it was pretty good. So that's going to do us for housekeeping. It was 20 minutes of housekeeping. And because housekeeping ran a little bit longer, and I hope that those were two major articles back to back. My Pixel 4 XL review kind of goes hand in hand with the original, the Pixel 4 XL revisit goes hand in hand with my original Pixel 4 XL review, where it's kind of a cranky soapbox on how gadgets are reviewed while we're also in the middle of a gadget review. And my Surface Duo rebuttal is an examination of all of these trends that never play out the way that tech reviewers say they will. That tech reviewers are not tastemakers. We're not. And we don't have our pulse on consumer trends because we're immediately compromised for average consumer experience because we do not experience these things like average consumers. So, you know, Pixel 3a becomes this shocking success and the Pixel brand outsells OnePlus. Tech reviewers don't have a good rejoinder for that. They don't have a good explanation for that because, oh, the Pixel's boring and it doesn't really do this and it doesn't have this and if it had a memory card slot and IP68, and then consumers go out and buy them like crazy. We have to have a market correction in my industry for how we consume this media, for how we produce this media, and we need to start looking a bit more broadly again, because it's getting harder and harder to validate these experiences. It's becoming more costly to produce this content. We're not monetizing like we used to. And then I think we're starting to get things really wrong. Again, I see how much joy some of my family members are having with $300 phones. You know, to crib a saying from Brandon, you know, that price to delight ratio, right? It's not that they're suffering through on these really cheap budget phones. It's that they genuinely like the experience and it was cheap. And I feel tech enthusiasts, tech reviewers especially, leading this conversation with what's going to get the best SEO and what's going to get the best YouTube traffic so I can monetize the best, we're starting to get it wrong. And that's making me really anxious. It's not a good look for our industry. It's not sustainable. And I don't know what it's going to look like if the bottom falls out.
I mean, pretty much when the bottom falls out at this point.
Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r glowing rectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together.
So, Aditya Anil, guest editor Juan. It's got a nice ring to it. I like that idea too. I don't know why I had this kind of mental block in my head. You're like, oh, nope, I'm doing my thing and I'll contribute to other people's stuff. But hey, it was kind of a strange feeling seeing my name as a link and under as the byline on another masthead. Maybe I need to get over that and work on that. Daybo9, as a reviewer, it should be your job to help me decide on buying this year's Samsung, last year's Samsung, or the Z Flip. Sentinel 909, it's like small phones. I've never seen something that's so much in demand, and other than Apple, no one is catering to these folks. Agreed. I would love. It's so funny that I crave going back to the LG G8, and that's not a small phone. Like, phones have gotten so big. I'm craving going back to last year's medium plus large sized phones. It's so silly. Oh, man. And from Andy, I've had the same experience. It's always a joy seeing family and friends enjoy price-conscious tech. And that there was that fear. That's one of the things that makes this so exciting is, like, you hand someone a $400 phone and you just let them use it. And you're like, oh, yeah, this is great. And it kind of does this and it kind of does that. So what is this? Is this like a competitor to a Galaxy? And you're like, that phone costs $399. Huh? It's so good. They were already on board. They were expecting $800. I don't know what a TCL is. What does a TCL do? That phone was just recently on sale on Amazon for $380. I mean, like $380 down and then you pay $20 a month? No. $380 down and you walk away and the phone is yours. And look, it's also a universal remote for your TV. Huh? I love it. I'm so tickled by reactions like that. It just makes me so happy. So, last week and the week before were bummer episodes of this podcast. We're not doing that today. I'm going to chew through news. We got to move through news. I really want to spend, like, proper, at least the last 40 minutes of this podcast on the gadget block. So, again, apologies. I'm going to be sipping water and clearing my throat this whole time. This week's news block, leading off with the news block, it's these are stories that we just need to keep on the radar. They're not I'm prefacing this a lot because I want to just sort of globally. We're going to move through this quickly, I promise. But we can't let off stories like this. John Oliver does one big push and it gets this huge mind share for a week. And then we're exhausted trying to follow up on this stuff after the fact. And especially those of us who are tech enthusiasts, we just need to be aware that things are being said or that positions are changing. So I want to start this off. This isn't news, right? This isn't hard news. This is just commentary on net neutrality. Coming by way of multichannel.com, kind of a non-story, but Biden says he would restore net neutrality rules at the FCC. Joe Biden has signaled that if he becomes president, his FCC will restore the net neutrality rules and FCC oversight authority the Republican FCC jettisoned in the Restoring Internet Freedom Order, as well as working to undo state laws blocking municipal broadband and invest even more in those projects. That's a lot. net neutrality is one thing. There are still around 20 states in the United States with laws on the books that prohibit the ability to make community funded or municipal funded broadband. And then there's also talk of him saying he's going to invest $20 billion into rural infrastructure. Those are three distinctly different categories of broadband politics. Each one of those individually has often represented decades-long fights between city, state, and federal governments against major corporations. Getting net neutrality on the books during the Obama administration was around a 10-year fight for the open internet order, where Verizon successfully sued the federal government to say, you can't have net neutrality until you instill these things to make it legal. It took 10 years. So it's really satisfying when a political candidate's just like, yeah, we're going to do this. This is a thing I'm going to do. Because of the way that this has been manipulated and because of the way that these regulatory actions have been eroded under our current FCC, we could be looking at roughly 30 man years of work. You know, like you talk about man hours of labor. This is a significant and substantial undertaking. Each one of these is a significant and substantial undertaking, let alone trying to accomplish all three. So the thing I want to highlight, because the title of this article is Net Neutrality, and it's something that I'm obnoxiously fixated on, if you've been listening to my podcast at all. I really want conservatives to find what they need to get on board some type of regulatory action. First of all, it has not served us well categorizing the internet as an information service. We have two major classifications of service. Is it an information service or is it a telecommunication service? And according to Republicans and Ajit Pai at the FCC, the internet is an information service. A telecommunication service is like phone lines, the actual architecture that gets people to a service like making a phone call. According to Ajit Pai, the internet is basically the same thing as Facebook or Google. It is not a telecommunication service. It is frivolity. I don't know that in light of the current situation that we find ourselves in, sheltering in place and social distancing, I don't think that we could have been shown clearer that our reliance on technology and data and services, that this is a necessity, that this is something as important to the future of our economy, education, healthcare, everything. This is as important as telephone cables were at the heyday of telephone being an exciting new technology. It does not serve us to keep pretending that the internet is a series of tubes that lead us to distraction and, you know, funsies. Oh, I can buy hot dogs and a Galaxy Quest Blu-ray on the internet. It's the same as Facebook. We need to grow up out of that. And also, if you'll pardon the one additional step in talking about politics, this is another very good example of why flipping on Title II regulation is terrible for businesses of all sizes. It took 10 years to establish some type of regulatory agency at the FCC. And then Ajit Pai was installed as the head of the FCC under the Trump administration, and it took about a year for him to undo all that work. Mega corporations, ISPs, telecoms, and all of the businesses that do business on the internet had to work their legal teams in one direction, and then in a year, that was yanked out from under them, and then they were trying to work their product and legal teams in a different direction. And at that time, we saw every major state start talking about their own potential net neutrality style regulations. Some states opted for deregulating and from walking away of having any kind of control over the internet, but states like California and New York had even more draconian protections built into their regulatory actions. They hit net neutrality even harder than the OIO and Title II with the FCC under Tom Wheeler. So if you're a mega corporation and you're trying to figure out how to do business, do you want one global, fairly weak regulatory set of guidelines, or do you want to have to mess with doing business 50 different ways in every state in the country, or do you just give up and say, well, New York's policy is the strictest, so I guess they get to decide net neutrality for everyone else? I understand from a libertarian or from a conservative viewpoint, regulations equals bad. That is not the reality of the world. That's a unicorn pipe dream. That's the feels goodies. I'm going to go to take a nap with my favorite teddy bear idea of the world. When you look at what it's really going to be in a world that Ajit Pai has created through the FCC is so much more complicated, is so much more difficult to work with, and is so much more detrimental to business and economic health than what we had under Tom Wheeler. I hope, if Joe Biden is elected, I still don't have a ton of faith in elected officials actually starting to get tech right, but that's a major one. If we go back to a basic FCC-style Title II regulatory protection over internet traffic and just trying to stop some of those terrible things like throttling, it's going to be easier and cheaper for everyone. I feel we can all get on board that as techies. All right. That took longer than I was expecting it to. News block. Come on. It's 9:45. All right. Let's really hit these real quick. Politico. I want you to read up on this because it's another sort of, non-story. California investigating Google for potential antitrust violations. This is the very beginning of a conversation about Google and antitrust. Right now, 48 states, Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia have announced antitrust investigations into Google. California has now opted for its own standalone antitrust probe. And I just love this one line. I had it. Where was it? Oh, no, I can't find it. But basically, Alabama is the only state not investigating Google at this point. So we don't have a lot of details on California's antitrust probe. We just got to keep an eye on it. So I'll have that in the show notes. You gotta link it. It's politico.com. This is the very beginnings. Big data is increasingly going to be scrutinized over the next couple of years, especially leading up to elections and all of the stories we've been seeing about Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. Google's a biggie. So I'll drop a link, sure, from Rue Sunshine. So there's not a ton of info on it, but we need to just keep an eye on it because I'm not sure what the angle is. Likewise, this is from the USPIRG. I don't know if you say that as an acronym, if you say US PIRG. I'll also drop this in the live chat too. Another follow-up story at the very beginning of this situation, we were talking a lot about right to repair and the focus on that being more consumery. But we've seen some traction on right to repair as it pertains to the medical community, right? It's funny where if you say, hey, man, farmers are having a hard time growing your food because they're not allowed to fix their tractors without paying out the nose for these ridiculously monopolistic business practices. And I know you're bummed out that your iPhone is really hard to fix, but Apple has said no to right to repair, so you don't get to have access to parts if you want to try and repair your own iPhone or take it to a third-party shop. That hasn't resonated as much. But you start talking about ventilators and people start listening about right to repair a little bit more. So again, from the USPIRG, life and death medical equipment repairers push for right to repair during the situation. It's definitely life and death. Nader Hamoud explained about his job as a biomedical engineer. He's with the California Medical Instrumentation Association and manages a biomedical engineering team at a California hospital. During a CalPERG event earlier this week, he recalled multiple times in his career where he had to go into the hospital in the middle of the night to fix a device. Doctors were waiting to use these devices, and if you don't get the device up and running in an hour or 2 hours, that patient will die. We have some issues. Again, deregulating stuff like this gives power and agency and control over some of these style issues, and competition is what we should care about. Competition in buying products, competition in maintaining and repairing products, competition is always the winner. There is no situation where having a completely vertical, enclosed, walled off solution is ever beneficial to the consumer. It doesn't happen. I'm not a communist. I'm not some whack job socialist. This is the foundation of capitalism. This is how we survive and evolve and build a new future. Is competing products will unseat uncompetitive products, and evolving products will be more enticing to consumers. It doesn't matter how fancy or flashy an ad campaign is, nothing gets better if we don't have competition. If you're complaining about your cell phone plan and you really only have one legit option for cell phone coverage, nothing is going to get better for you. You will always have a terrible experience because you don't have competition. Same thing with, you know, cabled internet, same thing with net neutrality, broadband infrastructure. We're seeing it here at the cost of people's lives. If we don't have options that are rated and are verified by the medical community that have some kind of oversight so that these repairs are done properly, if we don't have that infrastructure, you have a monopolistic lock on how people live or die, and companies get to profit insanely by that. So hopefully this situation has taught us another thing that we can start approaching in a more practical fashion. Right to repair is critically important, and I don't care how many Microsoft PR representatives get to talk about that at state hearings to say, no. Right to repair would harm our intellectual property. I want to replace a fan on my Xbox. Oh, you're not allowed to open that Xbox. I just want to replace a fan. No, you've got to take it to a certified Microsoft service center. But it's a fan. There's nothing proprietary about a fan. Our fans are very fancy. Dave Bonine, that's not deregulation, that's regulation, telling a corporation that they can't make products that aren't repairable. And that's the crux of this argument. If we deregulate this market, then they can lock in the entire manufacturing chain and prevent anyone from competing. It's a very sticky and it's a very thorny issue. But that's also why we need a competitive marketplace for every stage of the marketplace. You know, from dishwashers and appliances that are now becoming landfill e-waste all the way up to medical equipment that can save people's lives. It sucks. Again, if you live in a purely, you know, a strictly libertarian fantasy world, I completely understand. But we have allowed entrenched businesses to create duopolies and monopolies in different sectors. And we have to now untangle that. And the only tools that we have as consumers are legal ones. We can't vote with our wallet to regulate the medical equipment, durable medical equipment industry. I can't vote with my dollars there. I can't vote with my money to say which ventilator company I want to do business with if I get sick. So something else needs to change. All right. And rounding out the news block, 7 minutes, and we're into our first hour. This was just kind of a fun, happy little story. There was much gnashing of teeth when we started looking at better video compression. It was one of my favorite somewhat heated debates with Mr. Mobile back in the day, where he was very frustrated with the video camera experience on Huawei phones because he was using Final Cut and you can't just drag and drop HEVC files into Final Cut. So instead of complaining about Final Cut, it was Huawei made a poopy camera because they were using much better video compression. So, we have a new approved video compression standard. And this is directly from, I don't know how to pronounce this. I've always said Fraunhofer in my head. But this is, Fraunhofer HHI. After devoting several years to its research and standardization, Fraunhofer HHI, together with partners from the industry, including Apple, Ericsson, Intel, Huawei, Microsoft, Qualcomm, and Sony, celebrating the release and official adoption of the new global video coding standard H.266. So video compression is a super, super exciting thing for me in the techiest, nerdiest way. I want consumers to capture their memories in the highest possible quality that they can sustain. And even though storage is getting increasingly cheap and people can lean on cloud storage solutions, we talk about average consumers and we see so many people that just take the phone out of the box, go to video, and they shoot sort of mediocre 1080p video. My daughter's first steps, thanks to the LG V20, my daughter's first steps are in 4K. You know, like, there is no moment, important moment of my daughter's life that has not been captured at the highest possible fidelity that I could maintain. And I go back to look at those videos now that we have a 4K TV, now that I've got a really nice 4K monitor, everything got a little nicer. And when I go back and look at some of those older 1080p videos, even on my gaming monitor, which is a 1080p gaming monitor, not as good. Oh no, 1080p, 4K looks better on a 1080 TV or a 1080 monitor than 1080 does. I'm so, like, my nerdiness has paid off long term. These are videos and memories that I love to go back to. So, the important takeaway from VVC, this is H.266. So we've gone through H.264, that kind of ushered in the HD resolution. H.265 got really hamstrung by competing codecs and licensing and interoperability between companies like Google and Apple and the rest of the camera and video infrastructure community. I really want you to recall, in the list of companies that I just rattled off, the partners, Google was not a partner. So I still feel like there's probably some contentious debate happening over licensing. But HEVC, unfortunately, it took Apple doing it for consumers. Oh, I guess it's kind of cool if I can have higher quality video and it takes up less space. Again, I don't feel like Huawei or even ZTE had an option. The Axon 7 could shoot HEVC video. Sorry, I digress. H.266 is looking to cut file sizes in half for 4K and 8K video. So if we're ever going to pay off, I'm super not positive on 8K TVs. I mean, like, I know rationally it's more resolution. It's going to be better fidelity, blah, 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 blah. I feel like 4K is our sweet spot. But when we start getting 4K streams at half the data rate, that's going to be critically exciting. Look what happened when the global infrastructure started working and homeschooling at home. Immediately, YouTube and Netflix started throttling connections. So much video traffic goes out over the internet that streams immediately suffered when people were all sort of like clustered and consuming way more video data. Your 4K streams on Netflix, 4K HDR, all this LMNOP, you know, beauty stuff that you hear in the technical specs, cut that data rate in half. And now we're talking. Compression. I mean, again, I'm a fan of like shows like Silicon Valley. The first season of Silicon Valley is amazing because like it's so nerdy. And the show is basically like this huge sci-fi fantasy of incredible data compression. Like, that's the big hook. It's like at the end of that series is like, how can we make the best compression? And then, like, you're in it. Like, I'm so excited. H.266. I'm stupid excited. Now, obviously, I think this is going to be a primary benefit first for data infrastructure. So again, a Netflix, Disney Plus, you know, these types of services get better. And maybe I have to go out and buy a new Chromecast or something to properly decode H.266 in a native hardware fashion. Eventually, though, hopefully it does show up on phones. The 8K experience on a cell phone, not great. It's really hard moving that much information on any computing system, let alone a pocket computer. I don't know that 8K is the killer hook, but if we're really going to start producing and capturing that level of quality in our content, squishing the file size even more and having a good hardware decoder for it, critically important, super, super important. From Matt Tyler, does this mean YouTube will stop squashing your videos? Probably not. Probably not. I really feel like Google is going to fight tooth and claw against licensing this compression. They fought HEVC for so long. And it's basically still, as far as I know, I think it's still a transcode situation at YouTube, where now they're licensing the ability to upload HEVC, but I don't believe they're using that. Someone please correct me if I'm wrong. I might be completely off on this. But I don't believe streams on YouTube are HEVC. I think one of the VP9 flavors of video compression. What is that called? I can't remember what Google's competing standard for video compression was for 4K video. From Hakey, when you begin your own streams in 4K, we can finally see all of the individual beard hairs. That's gross. Oh, that's hilarious. I'm not going to do that to you. All right. 10 o'clock, right on the button. That's going to wrap it for the news block. Again, all of the stories, all of the articles, everything's going to be shared. SomeGadgetGuy.com. We've got to talk out real quick. The project that's so near and dear to my heart. And one of the reasons why I was really hoping, you know, like get some sharing on this week's episode and some conversation on this week's episode. We hit a really important milestone on the subreddit. Every podcast has a subreddit. My podcast is no different, but it's become an even more important mission for my role in the tech community to start finding ways to help people find content that deserves more attention. I feel like my content kind of fits into that definition. But above and beyond, my major problems with things like tech commentary get solved by better competition. If we tentpole only a couple of major YouTube channels, it becomes an echo chamber really fast, and our tech commentary is boring. It's not fun when everyone's kind of piggybacking on the same ideas. So we've got to celebrate channels coming up. We've got to look back at channels that used to be really popular and are still making content, but they are not surviving well in this YouTube, Facebook algorithm era. We got to start broadening, and we need to lead that discussion. And I am so proud of the community at reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I created this subreddit. It is organically growing and becoming the experiment I hoped it would be. So reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. The mandate is content that deserves more attention. You can put up a major YouTuber there, but they don't really have issues sharing their content. You know, like a Mr. Who's the Boss doesn't have problems getting his content seen, getting his stuff shared. But someone starting their first little blog and they're writing up their own consumer experiences contributes to this conversation in a really meaningful way. They're making content and they deserve a chance. Whether or not they succeed, right now it's really hard to just give someone the chance. And from Rue Sunshine, I liked that debate where you were the judge. Some great questions and points. Thumbs up. Again, I'm so proud of a group here that is organically grown. This isn't on, it's not like I'm a celebrity that can just make a subreddit popular. This has taken years to get to this point, but it's grown on its own. You know, like it's not me, you know, trying to tinker with Reddit popularity algorithms. It's people find it, they subscribe, they start sharing, we get upvotes, and we get cool stuff to watch. Reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And I won this week. I am so rarely at the top of my own subreddit. The OnePlus 8 camera conclusion, A number one. Burr, burr, burr. Number two, again, someone who has been contributing to this community, someone, two near and dear friends across the podcast with Sam and Matt featuring Zach Talks Tech. I got to go out of screen share here for a second. I try not to make my videos and podcasts just crank fests. But I have been trying to incorporate more into the conversation what goes into making this content. Zach Talks Tech. Zach is a good dude. And I am very encouraged. And I am, it's weird for me because, you know, I like Zach. I think Zach and I are cool. We're not like super close friends. So it's weird for me to say it like this, but I'm so proud of Zach for the conversation that he had on Sam and Matt's podcast. He talked about some really difficult challenges that he's been going through personally. That conversation is so insightful. Again, we're not talking about some dude with 10 million subscribers on YouTube who gets flown to China and gets, you know, automotive sponsorship deals. We're talking about a dude in the trenches making great content and hosting lively discussions. And sometimes there are some really tough life challenges that go along with that. If you haven't checked out Sam and Matt's Sunday stream, they host a tech conversation. It's, I love Sam and Matt because Sam and Matt are like, what if a really chill British Mastiff and a coked out Chihuahua hosted a podcast? That's Sam and Matt. But with Zach on that show, interviewing Zach on that show, I think you'll be surprised, or you'll be encouraged, or maybe you just don't know. Maybe you just don't know what goes into making the stuff. That was an amazing conversation. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people, producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
Hey everyone, Adam Dowd here, host of the Benefit of a Dowd podcast. The what now? It's my brand new podcast, and it will be filled with the biggest news of the week, interviews with tech insiders, gadget reviews, featured stories, you name it, I'll do it. No, I mean literally, this is a new thing, so it can be anything we want it to be. So head on over to benefitofadowd.com to subscribe. That's benefitofadowd.com, spelled D-O-U-D, to find my written articles and to subscribe. I hope to hear from you soon, and I hope you'll give me the benefit of the doubt.
Number three. Let me get this down to here. Number three. Dear smartphone makers, do you think we're stupid? From C4E Tech, talking about a recent, I think it was a recent regulatory action that changed prices on smartphones in the Indian market, and how a number of smartphone manufacturers started increasing their prices above those tax and VAT responsibilities. Really insightful. Again, I don't shop in the Indian market, and I don't have access to some of the phones in the Indian market. So for me to be aware of what's happening globally in the smartphone or tech chain, it needs, I mean, these types of videos are very, very instructive, because it's not quite like what we deal with here in the United States. Rounding out the rest of the top stories on Glowing Rectangles, don't buy a new phone. The five best used smartphones of 2020 from Painfully Honest Tech. We've got a great submission from Anabong Edda, Bored at Work, talking about why he still uses the Galaxy Note 10 Plus. Josh Vergara, this was one of my favorite looks at iOS 14 beta. You know, Apple's app drawer, ? And Josh always making very thoughtful content. That was a great video. And then one of my favorites of the week. I mean, I was so happy that it was still in the top 10. I really thought this one was going to be in the top three. Tech Alter, how do phone makers choose specs? And so I love that he, again, let's play the YouTube game. You're going to make a video talking about how a phone manufacturer makes a smartphone. This video looks at, what is it, the Realme versus an LG Velvet. If you play the YouTube game, that video won't do as well. LG, as a general topic for tech commentary, not going to score as well. But Tech Alter has built his channel on market conversations, the business side of technology. It's so funny, but it's so smart not to hinge that video on a particular brand, because then anyone who's like, oh, well, if he's just going to say nice things about LG, then I'm not going to watch that video because I'm an enlightened tech user. This is the kind of hoop jumping we need to do. I mean, like, why my channel does not perform as well as I think it could is because I just do not have the patience to sit there and try and wrap my brain around what SEO permutations of titles should go on my videos. I made a video. If you want to watch it, you can watch it. If not, go somewhere else. That's a great video. Because again, he's talking about market strategies. He's talking about retail strategies. He's talking about, like, well, we need to cut costs over here. So maybe it's important if we cut costs on something that you can't see on video. But if our phone is going to be in a store, then we can't cut costs on these types of build materials. I touch on stuff like that in my videos. Only Tech Alter can articulate all of the pieces of that as well as he does. Amazing video. Absolutely love it. ER1980. I absolutely love that video from Tech Alter. Those are the top stories on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. And the big important news is something we've been talking about for a while, and it's happened way faster than I thought it would. Let me go back into screen share right here. If we look at the members, we look at who is subscribed to the subreddit, it's no longer hundreds of members. It is now 1,014. 1,014 members on reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I got to tell you, it is really difficult trying to build some type of readership, subscriber base, getting people to consume content outside of the most established popularity vectors. You know, my YouTube channel sort of coasts at around 2,000 new subscribers a month, but it's only because I already have 100,000 subscribers. If I were just starting out today, like if I kicked off a new channel and started making literally the same videos, there would be no discovery. There would be no attempt at trying to build that. YouTube would make me prove that I'm worth being shared. Same thing happens as soon as you go outside of a major subreddit. I started Glowing Rectangles in 2014, and I really started putting some effort behind it around 2 years ago. So closer to the beginning of 2018. And it's taken 2 years to organically build this up with people who are really game to contribute and to participate with the mission of Glowing Rectangles. So now we broke 1,000. And over this last, I would say over the last 2 months, we've gone from one or two subscribers a week to like 10. We hit almost 20 new members over the last week. You know, to not only break 1,000, where we were in the high 990s last week, to not only break 1,000, but then to, like, you know, add another dozen on top of that is really exciting as this platform grows. So reddit.com/arb/glowingrectangles. It's my call to action every week. If you haven't ever been before, I am sure you're going to find someone new that you're going to like their stuff, that you're going to enjoy their content. But as always, we need shares, we need upvotes, we need comments. The more these individual properties are popularized on one little subreddit, the more likely they are to be shared and spread across larger subreddits. I want this to be a good theater subreddit where someone really does have a chance. Someone making their first YouTube video can directly compete against someone who's been in this game for 10 years. Again, why I'm rarely at the top of my own subreddit. The subreddit is not about me. It's not the me subreddit to tell me how cool I am. This is, I really want this to be a cool place that we can find and popularize stuff. And we really are in it as a community. So I think this Friday, I'm going to try and host a live stream just sort of for the subreddit. I'm not entirely sure how exactly to do that. I'm not super good at some of the newer, you know, like if there's a video streaming thing that we can plug in to a Reddit, or if there should be a live chat component on the subreddit. But even if I just have to host it on YouTube, I'm going to do a celebratory stream this Friday. I'm so tickled. Like, just no other word. Like, I caught it 2 days ago when we properly broke 1,000. Then we dropped down to 999. And then we broke 1,000 again. So I was very cautious not to be like, we did it! 1,000 members! Oh, if you go right now, it's only 999. But now I feel like it's a little bit more comfortable to celebrate that we're finally over there. Vazico say YouTube play buttons are in shortage. Don't nag me, Juan. I don't get a YouTube play button. I still don't even, like, I submitted a checkmark verification a month ago. No, 2 months ago. Oh man, time is moving way too fast. I don't think I'm going to get that checkmark again. YouTube has zero interest in a channel like mine. So, final plea, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles. I'm so proud of all the folks that are there. I'm so happy with the people I know who are in this community that are maybe taking their first steps into using a Reddit of some kind. We got miles to go, but this is a little subreddit that could, and it just makes me so happy to be a part, to have played a part in making something kind of cool. So let's get into the gadget block. Ooh, from Heike, I already have a wine bottle ready. Ooh, what should I? I think I'm going to have to do a fancy bourbon stream. I have not been keeping up with my fancy bourbons. Sorry, I just went way far away. Sent on Lano 9. Yeah, time to pop the bubbly. I do enjoy a good Prosecco, but no, I think I'm going to have to go bourbon. All right, gadget block. Real quick, kind of another non-story. Super frustrated with people that are like, I don't care anymore. I don't care if this ever, I just don't care. I'm over things. You know, you can tell I'm cool because I'm over things. I don't know. Google Pixel 4a? I think this is going to be a very important phone whenever it arrives. It kind of doesn't matter when it arrives. When it arrives, I feel it's going to be an important phone. So apparently Google pulled an oopsie. This is coming by Android Authority, C. Scott Brown. Google accidentally puts Pixel 4a images on Canadian version of the Google Store. Now, I will say this has been exhausting. Trying to cover Pixel 4a, Pixel 5, this is not a good year for tech and leaks and trying to get products out into consumers' hands. JJ 4884. So this is kind of what I'm getting at. I'm not going to pick on you here, JJ, but JJ says, I think the Nord is more important. Maybe. How do we judge the critical importance of one phone? I think for global markets and for the United States, as we saw from the Pixel 3A, the Pixel's probably going to be a heavier hitter in North America. Just the way that cell phone contracts go down, regional distribution, licensing, costs, it's really difficult to predict. To hear techies talk about the Pixel 3A was an abject failure until consumers lit up on that device, and it nearly doubled the Pixel adoption rate. And now we're all, well, yeah, I mean, like, it was a really competitive phone. And you watch all those techies that had to kind of, like, explain or justify previous positions and then how they've learned and how they grew, completely ignoring the realities of the real consumer market. The Nord is going to be a very critically important phone for OnePlus. And we're now all playing this mid-ranger game. You know, a phone like the Velvet arrives first. Well, I guess it's, no, to say it, to fairly say it, a phone like the Galaxy A71 kicks off a conversation. And then a phone like the Velvet has a slightly different conversation. And we all start playing different pieces and parts, and the mid-ranger game gets way more exciting. We're talking 5G devices, maybe that kicks out a TCL. If we're talking about premium chipsets, well, then we're going to have difficulties with pricing, as pricing has gotten way out of hand. I don't know that a Pixel 4a is more or less important. What's important is Google put the Pixel brand out there as a mid-ranger solution around $399. Can they show us an iteration on that idea that improves on that idea? Can you show us how you can evolve over time and continue to offer competitive products in that price tier? And can you reach out to consumers so that you can properly educate them to what the benefits and what the compromises of your solution might be, so that consumers can make an educated purchasing decision? And that's where I feel the Pixel 4a will be important regardless of when or if they launch the Pixel 4a. So, because again, the Pixel 4a technically still doesn't exist. I mean, we know it exists, but we don't know what the pricing is going to be. We're speculating. We don't know, you know, what this is going to arrive at, what kind of carrier deals they're going to show up with. You know, I'm sure, like, Pixel 4a, oh man, who could fathom this phone being $499 or $399? And then it shows up on my Google Fi for like $50 and a half a ham sandwich if I promise to subscribe to their service for a year. You know, like, again, it's all unknown until it's known. So I'm very much looking forward to it. I think what we'll see is something that offers a counterpoint to a phone like the iPhone SE. There's going to be a nerd out there who's going, oh, well, you need the A13 Bionic. And it's like, yeah, but something tells me a Pixel 4a is going to destroy the iPhone for battery life. And I'd be willing to wager that the Pixel 4a is going to arrive with a better camera than the iPhone SE. Time will tell. So, moving right along. I've got to get this out of the way here. This is directly from the Google developer blog. It's not a really in-depth story. I am kind of curious, what are your thoughts on Android updates? Because as we look at the real numbers coming out of Google, Android 10 was actually one of the fastest adopted operating system updates that they've ever launched. And so they've got this cute little bar graph here looking at Android Oreo. These are the red and blue lines. Then Android Pie. And we saw some improvements to Pie adoption. And then we see a much faster and a much taller line for Android 10. So companies that were putting out updates in the 100 days after launching the phone, and then at closer to like 250 in a year after adoption, the millions, hundreds of millions of phones that have been updated to Android 10. And this seems to be one of the key components to Android 11, which is continuing developer support and then moving more operating system components to Google Play. So while there are some significant issues when you look at the number generation of Android and what phones get those updates, what we should also be almost as equally critical of or concerned by are bug fixes, security patches, and all of the individual components that kind of are under the hood of Android, that those are getting updated. So if Google is going to eventually arrive at a more Microsoft-like strategy where Android is current longer, I think the way to do it is to focus on, for this version of Android, for Android 11, we're carving out 9 more pieces of Android, and we're going to make those a part of Google Play. Oh, so yeah, Samsung wants to go and customize all this and put one UI on there and skin it and add all of these other services that run on top of Android. These core pieces are now ours, and we're going to update those. And I think that's really the only way forward. You know, the draconian tech geek in the back of my brain wishes Google would just make it, you know, just rip the Band-Aid off. From here on out, Android is updated by us, and then you can install an APK to put a skin on top of it. It's not realistic, but we're getting there. I don't know. I mean, in light of, you know, the iOS 14 beta going out and now all of the editorials we've seen, like, there's no point in buying Android anymore because now iPhones have app drawers. Apple ripped off Windows Phone widgets, so now why would you ever buy an Android? What are we thinking about the update situation? I'll go first, but please drop some comments in the live chat here if you're interested in this topic. I really don't feel we'll get the longer term support that we're kind of craving until we have options outside of Qualcomm for chipset. Discuss. Alice Bockley, I love it. iPhones still don't have multitasking. Like, excuse me, Alice Bockley. iPhones now have picture-in-picture video. What? There is no other multitasking need. So thank you very much. But Apple wrecks Android because you can watch a video while you tweet at the same time. So that problem's been solved. Fact. Citation given. Daybo 9, my 3-year-old phone is still on Oreo. Yeah, I think a lot of people are. Unfortunately, my LG G7, my wife's LG G7, she took it from me. I'm never getting it back. It was the Google Fi edition of the G7. I don't think it's ever going to get updated. I'm so frustrated by that. From Tom Zach, buying a $1,000 Android phone, which will probably get 2 years of support, is not cool. I mean, no, I think we all agree with that. But, you know, for Google's side of this, I don't think they can solve this issue until Qualcomm actually has to compete. I mean, one of the things we lose sight of is the longevity of support for a lot of these products comes down to things like chipset drivers and APIs. And if you remember back, you know, like when OnePlus tried to make a cheap phone, the OnePlus X, it fell out of support super, super fast because of the chipset and the support that Qualcomm was willing to extend it. It made OnePlus look bad, but it really wasn't OnePlus's fault. You know, that's how Qualcomm decided the market was going to turn. Apple can hold on to support far longer because they control the chipset. If we don't have Google making custom silicon, or if we don't have Samsung really leaning into Exynos to provide that long-term support, then Qualcomm gets to decide how long your phone is supported. And if Qualcomm wants to see more Snapdragon 875 sold, well, I mean, we should probably kill, you know, update and support and patching for 855s. Because we can. Because we're Qualcomm. And no one's going to be upset at us. They're going to be upset with the phone manufacturers. We get to hide in the shadows, lurking like a tech Nosferatu, leeching off of the marketing and mindshare of Samsung and LG and Motorola and OnePlus. So there you go. Blue Malicious. Yeah, man, Qualcomm don't want to give update support for years. Otherwise, the orders go down for their new chips each year as people keep their phones longer. Matt Tyler, the only way Android gets longer support is flagships, and that's if they move to a 2-year release cycle on flagships. I actually would be fine with more companies kind of just doing TikTok style review update, TikTok smartphone updates, you know, a new model, and then kind of just a minor refresh a year in, and then flip. I mean, I think we would save so much cost. I think accessories would last longer. Manufacturers would be able to support their products better. It's rough. And Tom Zach, I'm really jealous of the day one iOS updates. Well, let me tell you, I wrote an editorial on the Google Pixel 4 XL, where if you like your Androids and you want day one update support, you do have an option. I'm just saying. So moving right along, I'm actually going to skip a story. I have a story. I'm going to keep it in the show notes. Engadget just had this write-up on worldwide PC shipments grew due to work-at-home arrangements. I don't really feel like we need to spend a lot of time on that right now. I do want to highlight real quick, Superhot. I don't know if you guys are fans of the game Superhot, but Superhot Mind Control Delete. They posted this really cool reveal trailer, which I'm not going to play because then my YouTube version of this podcast is going to get dinged with a copyright strike. But if you own a PC, PlayStation, Xbox version of Superhot, not Superhot VR, but Superhot, you will get Mind Control Delete for free. You have until July 17. I am recording the show on July 13. Go to Steam, go to Epic, go to good old games, go grab a copy of Superhot if you enjoy really good games. I don't know, if you don't like good games, if you like playing terrible games, then don't do this. But if you like playing good games, go get a copy of Superhot, because then you will get Mind Control Delete for free. You have roughly 2.5 days from the production of this podcast. Sentinel 909 is correct. Superhot rocks. So yeah, we don't have to spend a lot of time on that, because now I want to get to sort of the key feature reveal, release, excitement, talk about some cameras. Cause Canon, my first love in the, do I have it out here? Yeah, I do. This is the last Canon DSLR that I bought and I still continue to own. And actually the last nice lens that I have is my Canon 7D. Where I still like to take this camera out from time to time, even though it's not, you know, it's not as good. I mean, camera bodies have evolved a lot since the Canon 7D. From Hakey, Juan is using reverse psychology on us now, like parents use on their kids. No, I'm being serious. If you love to play terrible, terrible games that everyone should hate, and you have zero taste in gaming, and you just really love wasting your time on miserable experiences, then do not buy Superhot. I feel like this is an easy grok. You know, like this is easy to understand. So there you go. Yes, Canon. I learned how to shoot on Canon film DSLRs, on Canon SLRs, excuse me, and my first digital sensor cameras were Canon cameras. I have such a fondness and love for the brand, but as my career changed, as my requirements evolved, Canon felt like they were the most obstinate in keeping up with trends in technology. Oh, Two Spirits. I still have my AE-1. I still flirt with the idea of like, maybe I need to pick up an old film Canon camera. I used to shoot in high school on the photography department, Canon cameras. And then I was so bad at exposing film. I was really bad at it. And I'd sit there in the dark room and it would never come out right. And I'd always like burn it in way too much. It just awful. I loved it so much. But as time went on, the company that sort of invented the idea of super high quality video coming from these larger image sensor still photography cameras, just felt like they kept falling farther and farther behind. And it was around when I was shooting at Pocket Now, or just before I joined Pocket Now, I had largely switched to Samsung, the Samsung NX line for video. And the stills were okay. I liked stills off of the NX30 and the NX. The NX1 was actually a really nice APS-C camera. But then we all know how that went down, and I got burned by Samsung pulling the plug on their camera division. And it really left me in the lurch. So I really wanted an upgrade. And I produce what I feel are editorial-driven video reviews. I love watching big debates on, well, should you produce your videos in 24p or 30p? And oh man, I mean, you can see just like that frame rate. I'm so used to film, I need to make my videos in 24 frames per second. Oh, but 30 frames per second is more fluid. I'm not making cinema entertainment content. When I put this hand up on a video to show you a glass-on-glass rectangle of a phone, this is not the same as watching 2001 A Space Odyssey. I'm never going to take the time to make this content cinematic. Every second that I spend trying to make a beautiful panning and tracking shot of an inert lump of glass and metal with the softest and shallowest depth of field and the most immaculate lighting is a second I'm not spending using the product. I am not making a movie about this phone. I'm not making a film about this phone. I'm reviewing this phone. So in that regard, I very much more identify with like the Mojo community, mobile journalism community, and not the filmmaker community. It's that huge difference, that huge digital divide between an LG smartphone camera and a Sony smartphone camera. Because that Sony, I want to put up on a really nice tripod, and it really inspires me. I want to shoot narrative. I want to shoot a film off of that phone. But when I pick up my LG V60, I want to run and gun, talk, vlog, and dig into the nuts and bolts of something. So the Samsung camera team left me in the lurch, and I'll never forgive Samsung for killing the NX line because it was awesome. And I needed something. So I picked up a Panasonic, and that allowed me to upgrade to 4K. I can shoot these reviews in a higher image detail. And then I eventually jumped over to my main production camera is a Panasonic G9. So Micro Four Thirds, not the best for depth of field. You don't get the shallowest depth of field, the creamiest bokeh on a Panasonic Micro Four Thirds camera. But for around $1,000, I've got super wonderfully crisp 4K 60 without any additional crop. It's always been the biggest problem I have with full frame camera sensors is like it took us a long time to get to 4K 60 and it's pretty expensive. From Blue Malicious, wait, I thought some gadget movie was coming soon to a theater near me. Worst movie ever. Don't watch that movie. Hey, podcast listeners, I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a Mega Pickle coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious Mega Pickles. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch. Matt Tyler Wright, I'm calling it. Who wants a Some Gadget Guy production movie on a day in the life of Juan Carlos Bagnell? Thumbs up, thumbs down, go. I'm thinking Some Gadget movie would be a Speed follow-up where Juan has to film, edit, and publish a short film whilst on a form of transport before a certain time or it explodes. So my experiences with Canon, I would keep looking back. You know, I was looking for the Canon that I was going to go back to after picking up a Samsung. I've been looking at the Canon I was going to return to after moving to Panasonic. And I'm still not sure I found it, but this is a very encouraging step in the right direction. There's this like old school chunky familiarity to having a camera with like a big old mirror box for an optical viewfinder. You know, I am familiar with this and it's mechanical and organic. And I like the feel of that. I like, you know, looking at diopters and trying to focus in because my eyesight's kind of silly and I'm just a touch farsighted. You know, that whole experience of adjusting focus, you know, my Canon 7D, when it first arrived, it would focus just slightly ahead of the focus where the focus indicator was, you know? So, you know, little things like that, digging into that in a way that, I mean, I'm sure people who are into firearms appreciate that kind of granular mechanical, interaction with the product. Really, really excited that Canon is finally joining this arena. But I also think the timing on this is so incredibly precious. We talked last week about Olympus leaving the camera game. One of my favorite lenses, the lens that I'm actually shooting this on right now, is my Olympus 17mm prime, which is just a gorgeous piece of glass. It's micro four thirds. It's tiny. It looks like a pancake prime on another camera, but it's a full-fledged wide aperture, low light monster lens. So here, let me get this out of the way. The write-up that I really enjoyed was kind of digging through the press release coming by way of DP review. I really like the crew over at DP review. And so we have the Canon EOS R5 with a 45 megapixel full frame sensor, dual pixel autofocus, 8K video. And this camera body gonna start at $3,899. So not quite. We're just a penny shy of $3,900 for the camera body. And I really want to play with it. So here's the deal. I had a wonderful experience shooting the holidays on a Sony A7. The folks over at Sony sent me an A7 III, and not only an A7 III, but also their 50mm prime. And that 50mm, it's like one of the heaviest lenses I've ever used as a standard focal length prime lens, and it's gorgeous. That combination made for some of the most amazing poster-sized holiday photos we've ever printed. Because that's the thing, too. We actually do canvas and metal prints of a lot of the things that I shoot, even on phones. I've got a photo of Lex running through a fountain after Easter, getting her Easter dress soaked. And she just looks like this little water nymph. And I shot that from a G7, an LG G7. And it's a wall-sized print on in our bedroom. Just wonderful. So shooting on that Sony was awesome. I'm not breaking any news here. The Sony A7 series of cameras are phenomenal cameras. But I'm really excited because Canon does seem to be getting some of the mixed mode usage of the R5 correct for the first time. I think I've ever seen them work this side of the camera department. So, I mean, this is just, I'm showing it on the screen share right now, but if we switch over to the rear, I'm so irrationally excited to see a flip out LCD, a flip out screen. This is one of my biggest pet peeves with Sony is they have a tilt screen, but it doesn't flip out and around. And so when I was shopping a replacement for my Samsung, one of the reasons I ended up on Panasonic is exactly what I'm doing right now. I've got the little screen of the camera out so that I can very quickly touch and tap and focus and make adjustments. It's not enough that I've got it going over into OBS. I can't control this easily unless I can sit and dial and move around. And I don't want to have to set up a Wi-Fi device when I'm already at arm's length from the camera. 4K video, boom. Flip, 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 make adjustments, and I'm ready to go. And right now, if you're telling me I might be considering a $3,900 camera body investment, it's not enough that it's got great HDMI out and I can set up a monitor. I want to be able to control this camera under any conditions in any situation, however I might deem important. So for all of the amazing tech, like, you know, 45 megapixels and 8K video, this right here, a full frame camera, video focused with Canon Color Science and Canon autofocus, which I really desperately miss while shooting on Panasonic. This right here is one of the most critical benefits for me on this camera system. I feel like we can pay lip service to prosumer. Because, I mean, let's be honest, too. This is a mirrorless camera that's fitting into a lineup of Canon products right on a dividing line. It's super expensive. This is not a casual purchase, but it's right on that line between consumers who have money that they want to invest in a nice system and professional applications. It's right on that line. Canon, if you're really a pro cinematographer, you're really making content for like Netflix or something like that, they want you to move up to the C series. So this exists right on that edge where there's going to be more overlap. If you're telling me that this is a premium built overlap camera solution between filmmakers and YouTubers, I need a flip out screen. Mandatory. I'm not going to play that game of setting up Video Village so I can shoot a YouTube video. I don't have assistants and grips and people to run around, you know, miking and laving and makeup. I need to do it. I'm going to talk to you and I need to do it. No one else can help me. I can't afford anyone else to help me. So, It's the silliest thing that has made me irrationally excited about the EOS R5. hold on, let me go through here. Gary the Fireman, add in tax in New York, and that's over $4,200 just to pick up this camera body. Route 95, I once asked Juan how many patrons we needed to upgrade to red cameras. It needs a bit more than what I currently have. So I was just kind of curious, especially while we've got about 15 minutes to kind of wrap this up, and I want to make this, you know, kind of a conversation. The R5 and the R6 is a lower resolution. The R5, this 45 megapixel sensor, this is a studio camera. You know, again, having that tighter, smaller pixel pitch, more dots on the sensor, I mean, with the full frame camera, you're really not going to be hurting for low light performance, but the R5 is probably going to be a slightly better performer in that regard. I'm not, for me, frame rate becomes the more important part of my story. Um, 8K resolution doesn't matter as much to me as being able to show you the most fluid interactions that I'm having with the product. I mean, if there were a way for me to consistently shoot 120 frames per second, if I could really blast the office with enough lighting, that to me would maybe be even more instructive for people who had the monitors and the capabilities to interact with that content. One of the reasons I really push back against 24 frames per second in a tech review is because I'm talking about things like the user experience. When if you caught the Patreon version of my OnePlus 8 Pro review, I do things like, is my phone even on? Oh, I think the battery's almost dead. Wait, no, let's see. Oh no, just the screen's way low. I don't know why the screen's way low. Okay. So when I do something like enact multitasking view, and I'm praising the phone for how these transitions and animations arrive with these little, you know, bubble icons under the screen, and you can see how this flips back and forth. If I'm having a conversation about why a OnePlus feels more fluid and animations are more interactive, why are we shooting that in 24 frames per second? I'm not trying to entertain you with a gorgeously blurry, creamy bokeh shot of the rear of this phone as it slowly pan the camera across my desk. I'm literally telling you in a review, when you interact with a high refresh rate display and you look at how these animations are accomplished, this is one of the things that makes this a benefit, or this is one of the reasons why we call this a perk. I can't show you that at 24 frames per second. I kind of can't really show you that at 30 frames per second. But when I start shooting at 60 frames per second, I look freakish, right? You know, like me talking to the camera looks weird at 60 frames per second. It's one of the things I actually really love about editing my own videos, is the whole time I'm like right at the precipice of vomiting in my mouth. This looks not good. You know, people talking to camera at 60 frames per second doesn't look great. But when I cut to that B-roll and I'm demonstrating something that I'm talking about, I'm showing you gaming footage, and you see that gaming footage in high refresh, at a higher frame rate, that accomplishes way more. That's way more instructive to what I'm trying to describe. So I can tell you about my feels, and I can back it up with video that really does accomplish what I'm trying to demonstrate, and why that feature might make me excited, or why it's not being accomplished to the degree that I think it should be. It was a major fight that we would have at Pocket Now, is because I wanted to shoot videos at 60 frames per second, because especially back then, you know, Samsung's launcher would twitch, you know, it would stumble, it would lag. And we can talk about that, but then Jaime's over here shooting at 24 frames per second and it looks perfectly fine. But if you saw my video at 60 frames per second, I could demonstrate, watch what happens when I go to multitasking, watch what happens when I try and split screen. Did you see how everything locked up and stuttered in that transition? And you can't see it when the camera is smoothing out and making everything prettier. I don't care. I really don't care about giving you the prettier video. I want to accomplish the editorial better. So, I mean, to that token, you know, the R5 comes out. So, yeah, it's 8K video. What is this? 8K at 30 frames per second and 4K at up to 120. I really want 4K 120. Oh, man, I want that bad. Because one of the other things that I would love to do is finish the video at 60 frames per second and have a built-in half slow motion. I could shoot at 120, slow that down to 60, and you would be able to see almost like screen refresh by screen refresh how that device is being operated. Oh, I want that so bad. So, I mean, with the concerns, you know, Micro Four Thirds, Olympus pulled the plug on their camera divisions. I don't know that I'm going to invest a ton into my Panasonic cameras. Canon finally has something that I'm very curious. So I don't have any contacts. Canon isn't going to reach out to me for like review devices or anything like that. But I'm going to talk to some of the camera rental houses. And maybe also see if we could do like some kind of collaboration. I really love to revisit topics like, you know, why a standalone camera still matters in a world of amazing smartphone cameras. I feel like, you know, the smartphone destroyed the point and shoot camera market, and smartphones are closing in on like Micro Four Thirds quality. That is not an outlandish exaggeration. You know, when you look at the image sensor on a OnePlus 8 Pro, you know, bend pixel size to pixel size, obviously optics don't quite compare, but we're getting closer. And video quality, photo quality, immediacy, a tool that fits into more situations more organically. The advantages of a smaller sensor mirrorless camera, they're not gone. I still love my Panasonic cameras, but phones are chipping away. At some point, I am going to flip the switch and do like a whole bunch of videos like off of a phone and never tell anyone. And we're going to be really curious to see who notices if any of the content looks different. Because right now, almost half of the footage that goes into my reviews is coming from a phone. And no one really seems to know when that happens. No one really seems to be able to call me out on, well, that was shot from a Panasonic and that was shot from your LG or that was shot from your OnePlus. I seem to be doing okay. I seem to be flying under the radar there. So I really want to, this is going to be a camera I rent. Like I'm going to have to rent a lens package. Like I really only have, this isn't going to be a great lens to test it with. My 50 millimeter f1.4. It's a little old. The autofocus is a little noisy and stiff. And I bet you it would be a bottleneck for such a pixel dense image sensor. So I don't think that's going to work. Aditya, you know, 4K at 120 frames per second. What would be the file size on that? Big. Too big. From Heike, Juan, can you afford that camera body? No, I really can't. If I sold off a bunch of gear, I could maybe make an argument for it, but it really is outside my current tech budget. You know, right now I'm trying to scrape together funds to make sure I can tackle like maybe a note review. I don't even know if I'm going to get to a note. And if I want to also cover a phone like the Surface Duo, which I think is going to be more important to cover, even if it's not sold as well, you know, I need those funds to go towards the appropriate reviews. But I feel like a rental, it's going to be really hard to get my hands on one of these phones at launch. But I'd need to at least land the camera body and one or two of the new RF mount lenses. But I feel like that's a good rental, you know, like shoot on that for a long weekend, maybe rent it for a whole week and produce some content on my experiences there. Keep it really casual because I won't be able to do an in-depth review on a camera like that in a week. But it's still enough for me to share some experiences that I feel are going to be meaningful to people that care about that kind of stuff. And that Vazicose 8, and again, this is what's so exciting, is I feel like Sony has been in a little bit of a holding pattern. Vazikos writes, the A7S III is finally coming off, so I guess competition is nice. There's not a lot of pressure on Sony. Canon wasn't getting it done. Canon was not putting full frame pressure on the Sony A7. Now we've got a fight. And now we've got Sony looking at their market strategy solutions. We've got Canon. It's so weird to think of Canon as the plucky upstart in the mirrorless camera industry. I mean, like, they're the biggest camera brand, you know, the biggest camera established brand. And now they're fighting on Sony's turf. And that's good. That makes me really excited. from Root 95, on a broad note, there is the issue of phones rarely allowing the amount of control a dedicated camera gives, since their target audience is usually the point and shoot crowd. And I feel like there are some important conversations to have about that. You know, when you move to creating content, that needs to be a video where we detail and we break down reasons. You know, there are reasons why a phone becomes a better tool in a number of situations than a standalone camera. And then there are reasons why that standalone camera is critically important when you have a goal you need to accomplish. Route 95, there was that time with the V40 review where the color balance was quite off. JMX Warrior, my B-roll clips are currently being shot on the V60, and mostly because I'm so familiar with the LG camera app. It is super fast being able to dial in things like white balance. So Reno 95 brings up the hilarious point. I did a whole video on the V40 where I had been using the V40 to shoot B-roll, and I had completely spaced on changing the white balance for shooting me. And the lighting was way off, and it's just orange. I am bad, like smeary orange. But I still put the video out there because I thought it was hilarious. That's those types of things. Like when you're watching and you're in and you see, and the 60 frames per second, you move to this and you clip to that, and a B-roll pops up and it's a close up here. To move between footage. Excuse me, to move between footage without doing a whole ton of color grading, which I'm not very good at, I try and get it done in camera. And if I have a phone that lets me do things like dial in a very specific look, feel, and color temperature, it is so much easier for me to incorporate that footage into the rest of my workflow. Oh, JJ4884, you are under the radar with regards to scrutiny, since very few people take the time to check your content out. That's fair. from Aditya Nil, as Root 95 mentioned in the Discord, you could always get a note from TK or some other colleague. The Surface might be a better purchase. I'm kind of leaning that way. Again, I don't know that Samsung videos are going to perform all that well. Like, if I work my butt off to get a note with the consumer launch, my videos aren't going to track. The big surge is going to be for all the folks that Samsung designates as being worthy of embargo. Samsung won't reply to any of my messages unless I write them a letter saying, I want to put your product on TV on the largest morning talk show in Southern California, and I promise to only say nice things about it. That was the last time Samsung worked with me on any content. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to work with my producer friend over at Fox LA. That actually wasn't something we were super proud of, because we thought it was going to be a good relationship building exercise with Samsung. And then Samsung basically went radio silent. They got what they wanted. They had Good Day LA talking up their products, and then they disappeared and they completely ghosted me. So I'm not inclined to play the Samsung game and kiss the Samsung ring to try and get into the good graces of Samsung embargo. or even being invited to Unpacked events anymore. It's not worth it for me to try and be another little fish competing against people who got to use the phone for weeks before I even could do an unboxing video. So I don't want to go the whole year without talking anything Samsung though. So I'm increasingly thinking like I might pass entirely on the Note and instead circle back to a phone like the A71, which I am much more interested in a more affordable 5G solution. The S series was just bad timing. I was not planning on the situation when I was looking at my schedule because I had always intended to cover the S20, but it didn't really happen. The Note is increasingly and also ran to the S20. It's an S20 with an S Pen, and that's way less exciting than the Note used to be. But the A71, that to me is a phone that I feel is a much more consumer-friendly conversation that we should be looking at longer term. How well is it supported? How well does it really live up to their marketing claims? What do these cameras have to offer? 5G is going to be one of those divisive regional tech situations. That to me is way more interesting. And it's cheaper. but I want to put that phone up against, you know, a Velvet. I want to put that phone up against a Nord. I want to put the A71 up against an iPhone SE and a TCL. I kind of want to put that up against like a Stylo, you know, like something ridiculous. You know, is this really three times the phone that the Stylo is? You know, that to me is, and then hopefully by the time we're getting closer to, you know, the back to school season, whatever that's going to look like in your region, maybe we'll be talking about a Sony Xperia Pro. Maybe Sony won't have to play this BS game with US carriers to try and get 5G certifications, and we'll get a pro device from Sony where they really mean it when they say pro. Oh, Gary the Fireman, it's not Good Day LA without Jillian Barbary. Too true. Those were good times. Yeah. But yeah, so the Fox LA crew, I would usually do their morning block early in the morning. And those were some of my favorite tech segments to work on. And the producer I was working with, Shaka Armstrong, is just a great producer. And I think we were both a little, I shouldn't use a word like surprise, but we were a little disappointed when Samsung kind of played it that way. It was for the Note 9 launch. So we did an on-air piece. Again, we're talking major market. You get something on morning TV news in Los Angeles and you're reaching an audience that rivals European countries, the greater LA area. And then those news segments get pushed out to other smaller markets. You know, you could end up seeing a part of what we produced in Arizona. It's big. And it was really exciting. It was the day after Unpacked. They sent a Samsung rep. And they were a little like quiet about it, obviously, because Unpacked was the day before and embargoes were just lifting. But we had the phone on the air and it was basically just a spec regurgitation. That's all we really had time for. TV news moves really, really quickly. But then we also did a Facebook stream, you know, for the Fox LA Facebook page, which was, again, I mean, like, I think we had like thousands of people watching that live stream because it was their audience. And I was on fire. I mean, like, again, you know, like, I had just seen Unpacked. I barely had the spec sheet in front of me. I'm rattling off questions. We're doing live demos. Let me show you S Pen. This is how this is going to work. This is their new charge pad because Apple AirPower, you know, hadn't failed completely yet. But Samsung had this solution, and I can show you Dex if you care about desktop mode. And everybody's loving it. And the Samsung rep is like, "Man, this is awesome. Loved working with you guys." Radio silent. So I wasn't really particularly impressed with how Samsung built or maintained a relationship there. And someday I'll tell you the story about how Samsung PR kicked out Pocket Now reporters from an event. But we don't have time for that today. Matt Tyler, get Juan on morning TV shilling for LG. Let's go. LG is not going to be Unfortunately for TV news and how we talk about tech on local TV, it's probably not as big a draw. I did use LG for a camera demo that I did. One of the Fox LA segments we did was on how to improve your smartphone photography. And it was kind of a fun way for me to also plug my book. The phone I made a point of using was an LG because at the time it was the G7, and it was easier for us to get that hooked up to a TV so that we could do a larger screen share of what that camera looked like. And we, for some reason, we couldn't get an iPhone HDMI out to work. And it was like on the day, you know, so we're about to go live. Nothing's working. We can't feed this HDMI into one of the receivers. We can't get it, you know, like directly on screen. We wheel out a TV and we're just going to shoot. We're going to point a camera at a TV and as opposed to just getting it as a direct feed. iPhone's not working. Samsung's aren't working. I have this crap USB-C adapter. I plug it in. At the time, the G7 was the phone I was really using. I had a little camera mount. We ripped the iPhone off the tripod, set it up. I poke around, take a couple shots. It's working. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. You're on air. I really miss doing live TV. Because live TV news, it is always like up to the absolute last second. Nothing works. Everything is burning down around you. And then the camera turns on and somehow you make a segment happen and it works. And the adrenaline rush you get from that, it's like the most powerful feeling if you love, you know, like kind of thriving in those kinds of moments. It's incredible. So yeah, I'm hoping that after all of this calms down and we can kind of get back to it, I should reach out to Shaka and just see how he's doing. I haven't talked to him for a little while. From Heike, if I recall correctly, Jaime Rivera had to work his ass off to rebuild that relationship with Samsung after that incident. After that incident, there was a new team member at Pocket Now who also helped contribute to that Pocket Now ring kissing. He was a doofy guy with a terrible taste in hats, a very punchable face. And he's got a lot of stories about what it was like trying to work with Samsung PR so that we could be on the list again. Hey, we lost it. I was about to actually talk about Samsung, and then the stream died. That's probably our cue, though, folks. We got to end this. My voice is getting real rough. Thank you so much for joining. Thank you so much for participating. This was a fun, chill. DJ Co was listening and killed the connection. Samsung has their tentacles in everything. I love it. Time for housekeeping. That was a good warm-up. I'm glad we got that worked out. Now we can do the podcast for real. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, thanks so much for, I don't know. So yeah. Hold on, let me type this in. You guys might need to refresh a browser, but anyway. Let's bounce out of this. Them's all the stories. Everything that we talked about this week is going to be on somegadgetguy.com, all the show notes, all the links. But more than anything else, it's just that continuation. These are longer conversations than a single video can ever accomplish, a single editorial. We just need to keep our eye on the prize. We need to keep our eyes on the ball. And especially those of us who are tech savvy, you are going to be the resources for your circles of family and friends. And, this is why we kind of need to understand what's happening with our hobby, you know, with the tech that we care about and the tech that we're passionate about. So I'm always super appreciative of you folks joining me on these, weekly ranting adventures and, hilarious failures of live streaming technologies. it's the best way. It is the perfect way for me to start a week, to get recharged and ready for the week. And just to kind of tease it out, we're going to have a spread of topics coming to somegadgetguy.com over this next week. I'm going to be looking at some photography equipment. I've got a beautiful tripod that I'm wrapping up a review on. I'm going to be looking at a desktop mode follow-up on the LG Velvet. I'm looking at a follow-up, a long-term review on the Pixelbook Go. Pixelbook Go has been getting a lot of use in our household because of everything that's going on in the world. And I think, again, it's easy to lose sight of what that review was like a year ago and how much the world has changed today. So thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much, everyone that I saw that was sharing this week. It really helps. You know, if you're reviewing podcasts, you go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify or Google Podcasts. These conversations don't exist in a vacuum, and I don't think they should. I mean, I literally would not be able to have a conversation if people weren't showing up to converse. So thank you so much for all of the support and the participation and the activity, and be on the lookout because we're going to try and do that live stream this Friday. I haven't nailed down the time yet. Hit me up on Twitter or social media if you've got a recommendation for the time. I'm thinking I'm going to need to make it at night, so it's like a, you know, like a Some Gadget Guy after dark, drinking a bourbon, kind of a live stream. But the Glowing Rectangles community is amazing, so I'm really excited to be sharing that good news. I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I'll catch you back here next Monday for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SGGQA podcast channel. Be well. Stay safe out there. Seriously, the world is flipping crazy right now. Keep your heads down. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. And I'll catch you back. I love y'all. Take care.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.